The following program was previously recorded. From the studios at 33rd and Burt, this is a special extended installment of Live and Local. I'm your local host, Mike Hogan. And my guest today is the current and first woman mayor of the city of Omaha, Mayor Jean Stothard. Mayor, thank you so much for joining me today. Appreciate you coming
down. Absolutely, my pleasure.
It's been a while since we've been able to.
It has been a while. We have lots to talk about.
A lot has gone on, hasn't it?
It has. It certainly has.
Just for those that may not remember the last time you were here, because your background is, well, it's very full. Mm-hmm. So I just want to remind people that you began your career in nursing 12 years as a critical care nurse, nursing manager. You were head nurse at St. Louis University. Responsible for department budgeting, hiring, and staff management
as
well.
That's correct.
And ended up picking yourself up with some baggage you've kept all your life.
Yeah, like my husband. I found him there. Yeah, I was a head nurse in a critical care unit. I did that right when I got to nursing school. And lo and behold, one day I'm admitting a patient, and I call this resident who was on call that day, and here comes my husband-to-be. And the rest was history. We met over somebody having a heart attack. How romantic is that?
As long as you saved them.
Yeah. I believe we did.
That's perfect. The two of you moved here in 92?
We moved here in 92, yeah. And, you know, we've moved all over the country. My husband is originally from Massachusetts. I'm from St. Louis. Met at St. Louis University. Then we went to Seattle, University of Washington. Then we went back to St. Louis University. Then we went down to University of Texas in Galveston. And then we came up here. So we moved around the country with his training and his career. And then when we moved here, my kids were small. They were going into kindergarten and second grade. And I thought, well, I could go back and work in the hospital because I really love doing that. But they'd probably put me on the night shift on the weekends because I was new. So I just really dove in and got involved in the school district. And that's how my political career, I think, started, because at first I was really involved with the school district and the PTA and things like that. And then there was a position on the school board that was open. And then I decided to ask to be appointed to that. And I was chosen. And then I ran and served 3 terms on the Millard School Board. So that's kind of how my political career started.
You went from there, from the Millard Board of Education, to trying out for the Nebraska legislature, ended up getting a city council position for District 5, and then you went up against Jim Suttle a few years later.
That's correct.
Beat him head to head.
That's correct. And you know, when my last 3 years on the school board, I was president of the board, so I served in a leadership position. And you brought up that legislative seat. That was in 2006.
And how many votes?
14. I lost by 14 votes against Steve Lathrop. And you know, to this day, though, because Steve always tells me, if I would have won that legislative race, I would have never ran for mayor. So,
sure.
See, he did me a big favor beating me by 14 votes. He reminds me of that a lot.
I'll bet he does. But if that doesn't say every single vote counts, get out there and vote.
Boy,
I don't know what
I'm
does.
I'm telling you, I know it. And when I talk to people about running for elections, I bring that up all the time. Every vote does count. It's really important. But it taught me a lot. And it taught me a lot about myself. And it taught me that, you know, in a political race, you're either going to win or you're going to lose. No second place. And there's no shame in losing. You just try to get better at whatever you're going to do next. And that's what I did. But when I decided to run for city council, I got a team together. And I said, we are not going to lose this race by 14 votes. So it just makes you work harder almost on the next one.
How big a deal was it to be the first woman mayor of a city the size of Omaha?
I thought it was a pretty big deal because it was historic. You know, there's been 50 mayors before me, all men. When I was on the city council, I had been the first woman elected in over a decade. The last woman was Brenda Council. And so when I decided to run for mayor, it was a challenge. And, you know, there was 7 or 8 in the primary. So there was, that meant there were, you know, 7 men and 1 woman, me. And I had a lot of things said to me, you know, when I decided to run for mayor, because it was kind of like, hey, honey, this is a job for men. You know, maybe you should go back on the school board. But it just made me even more and more determined that I knew I was able to do the job or I wouldn't have done it. And I knew I would give it 100%. And I just thought, I'm going to work harder than anybody else. And we did. And we won by a really big margin. And we challenged the incumbent. And
sure,
challenging an incumbent anytime, no matter what position it is not easy. They're well known, they're well organized, they have a lot of money, they usually have a big staff already. Right. So that was a big challenge. But I literally worked for a full year on that first mayoral race. I knocked on over 20,000 doors myself. We counted them. And it was wind and rain and sleet and snow. We were out there walking, and I think that's what did it. It was a good old grassroots campaign.
April 7th was the last time that you were here, and since then, coronavirus began to spread. It became apparent that more action had to be taken in the form of closures and restrictions mm-hmm. and restricting gathering sizes, both public and private, mm-hmm. which is an interesting decision that has to be made.
Yes.
People think of the weddings and more sadly, the funerals that folks were not able to attend and that type of thing. Can you take us through the watershed moment when you and your advisors are together and you go, wow, this has reached a point where we have to do X?
Mm-hmm. The last 4 months have been very challenging for everyone. It was first a pandemic that we are still dealing with, and then we had protests and riots. So both of these events are going to have long-lasting and changes in Omaha, I think, and we just had to deal with these things. You have to play the hand you're dealt. And so the pandemic itself, it required unprecedented but necessary changes. And like you said, in our lives, our work, our school, and at home. And so there was a lot of decisions that had to be made early on. I worked very, very closely with Dr. Adi Poor, who's the director of public health for Douglas County and also the governor.
And how smart is this lady?
Oh,
right,
Dr.
Poor. Wow. Yeah, Dr. Poor.
Oh, I love Dr. Poor.
Wow.
And you know, she's not an epidemiologist. And she's a toxicologist, and her husband is also a physician, and he is a pathologist. But she is a very smart, wise person. I've grown great respect for her. But, you know, it was just in March that the first confirmed community spread cases in Douglas County were there. And the governor had made a decision that when the second community spread case, then it was going to be shut down. And he made those decisions. He declared a state of emergency. I declared a state of emergency for the city of Omaha. And that allowed for the first directive health measures, and we call them DHMs.
When did you find out that the governor, you know, here's the numbers I'm looking at. Mm-hmm. When we get number two in Douglas County,
yes.
Then here's what I'm going to do from here in Lincoln.
He absolutely did.
Was there some sense of great teamwork, if you will, mm-hmm. as far as that goes? Did you feel like you weren't on an island by yourself?
No. I felt very connected with what was going on. We had probably conference calls almost every day between the governor, Dr. Poor, myself, and then he had people from infectious disease, biocontainment, public health, immunology. You know, we are all collaborating together on what are these moves we have to make. And I think it's important that people realize that I think he declared the state of emergency around March 13th or so. But it's important to remember when the governor first initiated the first DHMs, directive health measures, putting all these restrictions, closing down schools, you know, doing all the closings and the things that they did, at that time in March is when New York City was first doing their DHMs and closing things down. And it is probably known that COVID was in New York City either in December or early January. So you could tell the difference here. And that is in New York City, they had months with masses of people in restaurants and public transportations with COVID spreading this before they did any restrictions. We did it with the second case diagnosed. And I know this is to be true because people will come up to me and say, well, see, you know, we did all these restrictions, but nothing really that bad happened in Omaha or in Douglas County like it did in New York. I could tell you we could have been a New York or a Chicago or a Los Angeles or an Atlanta. But because we put all these strict, strict measures in place really early, that is why we don't have that many cases in Douglas County. And it is still here. It is still extremely contagious, extremely dangerous. People will say a lot of times it's just the flu. This is no flu. This is no H1N1. Even the time on a ventilator is so much longer with COVID-19. And we do not have any therapeutic treatment for it now as far as an antiviral. And we still do not have a vaccine. And until we do, it's going to be around.
Right now, nationally, we're seeing spikes in COVID-19 cases. Texas, California, Arizona, and Florida have started closing things
mm-hmm.
again.
Mm-hmm.
Iowa's having an enormous spike, and they're two big college towns in both Ames and Iowa City.
Mm-hmm.
They are closing things right now. what is your view on wearing masks?
Right. I think mask is one of the most important things that we can do. You know, my mask protects you, your mask protects me. And there's a lot of debate in the beginning about, oh, the mask cause CO2 toxicity or oxygen deprivation, or they don't work, and when they get wet, they don't work. They do work, and we know that they do work. The three most important things still is wearing the mask, the social distancing, and the hand washing. In right now, all of those things are in guidelines. And soon, when we go to phase four, and we will go into phase four probably around the 1st of August, all of those things are going to be guidelines that we've done before. But those three that I just mentioned, the hand washing, social distancing, and the mask, if we continue to be diligent and do that, we can really still continue to help control this. If not, we're going to see what we are seeing in other cities. And what has happened in other cities is, you know, the restaurants opened up, the bars opened up, the beaches opened up, and there are people that are close together and they're not wearing their mask. There's a term called viral load, and it's basically how much you are exposed to that virus. So say if you had COVID and I was just talking to you and I was exposed, maybe I would get a light case. But if I was in a room full of people and everybody was sick and I was getting exposed over and over and over and over again, then I might get really sick with this or critically sick or die from it. That's what has happened in some of these other cities. These masses of people, many of them don't know that they're COVID positive. Many are asymptomatic and they're just spreading it. And it's just people respond differently. Everybody's immune system is a little bit different. If you have comorbidities, if you have some sort of a condition, you're taking medicine. Even they even said a comorbidity is being over 60. So
I know.
I'm in trouble.
Yeah, but age is a problem all of a sudden,
but
right?
It's true. Yeah. Audie Poor has always told me if you take one pill a day, that means you have some comorbidity.
By the way, I thought that was one of the greatest illustrations to be able to figure out where you stand on the line. If you take one pill a day on a daily basis, you need to take extra special care. I thought that was amazing. By the way, I just want to let the listeners know that you and I are actually about 10, 12 feet apart.
Yes, we are.
And we came in wearing masks.
Yep.
We are socially distanced.
I couldn't reach over there and smack you if I wanted to.
Yeah, and you've wanted to twice already, I can tell. So I saw the hand flinching.
We're far apart.
With that said, how do you feel when you see television, the film of, you know, either a protest or a crowded box store or someplace where there's this dwindling percentage of people that are wearing masks, and we're seeing that nationwide this seems to have an impact of some sort? How does that make you feel? What does that do as far as you going, oh boy?
Yeah, I do go, oh boy, because it's, to me, it's irresponsible, because I do not know and you do not know right now if you may have COVID and be asymptomatic. And again, if we are going to control this, we all need to take responsibility. You know, all we were doing is telling people to stay at home for a while. We didn't do a lockdown here. We didn't do a shelter in place in here. We just said stay at home. And then a lot of people got angry and they would say, you know, you can't do this because I have a constitutional right to go wherever I want to go, to do whatever I want to do, and I do not have to wear a mask. There's no law about wearing a mask. But we didn't want to make it a law.
And why not? Because some folks are saying, you know what, Grandma and Grandpa are having a hard way to go at the store. Don't they have rights too? So why is it not a law?
Well, yeah, because, and we've talked about this a lot, Dr. Poor and the governor and I, but if it was a DHM and if it was a law to wear a mask, and some governors have done this now, then what that would mean is if you did not have a mask on, it would be a crime. And I did not want to, neither did the governor, to say, you must wear a mask, and if you don't, or if you can't, or for what you don't have one, or what forever reason it is, then you are committing a crime. So we felt like, give everybody the information, let them understand how important it is, and then just plead with people to please be responsible and wear a mask. If we really want to control this, and we can, until we get a vaccine, then we really need to all take that responsibility and wear a mask. I'm going to tell you a quick story. I was in line like everybody else, 6 feet apart at Home Depot on a Saturday morning. There was a family in front of me, and there was a man and woman behind me. The man behind me and was a wife or a girlfriend, didn't have a mask. The family in front of me did. And the family in front of me turned around and said, Mayor, you know, you're doing a good job. And you know, we all got to be responsible. And we were just talking, and I said, yeah, I said, you know, this is kind of the new normal here of us standing in line like this and wearing the mask. The guy behind me had a different opinion, and he was very angry. And he said to me that you're making Omaha like the Soviet Union, and I am not going to wear a mask, and I am not going to do this, and I'm not going to do that. And I was just standing between two completely different people, the way that they were viewing this. And, you know, all I could do is look at the guy behind me and think, God help us, because that's the problem. I mean, he did not want to take responsibility. Yes, you have a constitutional right to assemble. You know, yes, you have all those rights. But when your rights interfere with my rights, then there's an issue. And constitutional rights are not absolute. You know, right. And the great thing about the United States is yes, we are taking, and some other states even more so, we are taking some rights away temporarily. The great thing about the United States is you will get those rights back, and we guarantee it.
And it's actually one of the large differences there. Anecdotally, and I've mentioned it before, I do some stand-up comedy. So take this as the kind of tongue-in-cheek thing that it, mm-hmm. that it is. The folks that are complaining that the government is forcing us to wear masks, I often want to say, you're talking about the same government that really wants facial recognition to work? Mm-hmm. If you really believe the government's out to get you, they really want to see your face. There's plenty mm-hmm. of cameras around.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, like I said before, we are so fortunate in Omaha with Nebraska Medicine. We have some of the top physicians and scientists in the world in infectious disease, biocontainment, public health, immunology. They're the ones that are consulting with the governor and consulting with Dr. Poor. They're the ones that are making these recommendations. You know, I hope people don't just look at it as government is trying to interfere with our life. We are trying to get the best information possible out to people to say, right now, there is no treatment for this. And if you get it, I don't know if it's going to be mild or you're going to be in an ICU on a ventilator. But here is our best recommendations. You know, I don't want to make it a law to have to say you have to wear this. And if you don't, sure. it'll be a crime. But just pleading with people to be responsible, because we can continue to control it. Other states, you mentioned this earlier, are reversing on lifting and easing their restriction. We don't want to do that here. We want to gradually open things up, because people's health and welfare is number one. But we have to balance that against the economy, against jobs. I mean, you know, it is not very healthy for a family not to be able to pay their rent or buy food either, because they're out of work. So it's a very delicate, careful balance that we have to go through right now. But I know the governor does not want to go backwards. And so we won't have to go backwards if people are just responsible.
Absolutely. We're talking with Mayor Gene Stothert here on a very special extended edition of Live and Local. I'm your local host, Mike Hogan. We're going to take a momentary break here, and when we come back, schools are opening, and each district has a little different take on how that's going to work. We'll get Mayor Stothert's comments on that in just a moment.
Hey there, it's David Green. You know, there comes a time when you've just got to let go of that old vehicle. Maybe it has lots of great memories, but it's also maybe just taking up space. And selling it can be such a hassle. So here's one thought. Let this station take that vehicle off your hands. Proceeds from the sale benefit this station, and you could get a tax break. So call today, and thanks.
Visit kios.org/car-donation for more.
Hi, I'm Judy Carmichael. Get a fresh look at the world of jazz Thursday nights at 8 on Judy Carmichael's Jazz Inspired. Join me for great conversations about how jazz inspires creativity across disciplines, from theater to science, and of course, for some great jazz. That's Jazz Inspired Thursday nights at 8 here on KIOS Omaha Public Radio.
Step into the uplifting sounds of straight-ahead jazz. Hi, this is Rick Urban. Every Saturday night, we enjoy music spanning 8 decades of dynamic evolution, from the legendary artists to lesser-known masters and new releases. Join me at the Jazz Junction at Saturdays between 8 and 11 p.m. here on KIOS FM.